Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc. Merrily We Roll Along is a musical with a book by George Firth and lyrics and music by Stephen Sondheim. It's based on the 1934 play of the same name by Kaufman and Hart. The musical ran on Broadway for only 16 performances in 1981, a disappointment movingly chronicled by original cast member Lonnie Price in the documentary film The Best Worst Thing That Ever Could Have Happened, which is available to stream on Netflix. Roundabout Theatre Company's company-in-residence, Fiasco Theatre, is shifting ground and opening a new version of the show off-Broadway at Roundabout's Laura Pels Theatre. Previews begin tomorrow. In 2014, Fiasco and Roundabout collaborated on an innovative and lively production of Into the Woods, another Sondheim show. Noah Brody and Ben Steinfeld are co-artistic directors of Fiasco Theatre, along with Jesse Austrian. For this production, Brody directs and Steinfeld plays Franklin Shepard. The show's music director is Alexander Gemignani, who's also providing orchestrations and new arrangements. I mention Gemignani even though he's not present for this interview, so I can tell you that his father, the great Paul Gemignani, was the music director on the original production. Anyway, we're going to speak with Noah and Ben about Merrily We Roll Along. Noah and Ben, welcome to the roundtable.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I know that I told you both this already, but we want the listeners on the same page. I am to the sky excited about this. I loved Fiasco's production of Into the Woods, so you don't have to convince me that what you're doing now is going to be good. I'm fully on board, but let's talk about Merrily. Yeah. How long have you been working on it? It famously failed when it was initially on Broadway. What's Fiasco doing with it?
I guess at this point it's been about 2.5 years. Does that sound right, Ben?
Yeah. I think so.
2.5 years and multiple workshops. One of the ways that we came to it and it came to us was after the production of Into the Woods at Roundabout, we sort of looked at each other and said, that was a lot of fun. We liked working together. Let's do something together again. What should we do? Instead of just asking that in a big way. It's actually a title that Roundabout initially proposed to us. And I think the reason we can get into this more, but really the reason that we're doing it is not because it's famously a flop, although that's true, but it's because of what it is, what it brings to us, and what how we responded to it, what we like about it, as opposed to, aha, here's something we think we could fix.
Right.
So by and large, we knew the score, loved the music. The music is a spectacular. It's a spectacular score, meaningful. And like with all of our other projects, the things that we respond to, we often respond to as actors, which is the parts that we want to play, story that we feel is interesting, rich, language that is potent, worthy of unpacking, a sort of a story that we feel we can stand behind as storytellers and theater makers that we feel is both will be resonant with the audience and is consistent with our ethos as storytellers. And Merrily brings all of that in spades, and it has and has historically had deep challenges. It is a challenging piece to understand, to conceptualize, to try to tell in a way that sort of resonates with the audience. But the bones of it are so solid and so potent and really sort of intrigued us that we felt the journey became very worthy.
Yeah, and I would add that one of the things that Merrily has is it's about artistic collaborators who have been friends for a very long time. And that is true of Fiasco. That's how we came together. We came together as friends who learned how to be artists together and were inspired by each other to make work together and to collaborate together. And we've been through the ups and downs of being young people who meet with lots of dreams and who do something that a lot of people think is worthwhile and that we think is worth trying to do. And we've had families, we have kids now and stuff. And so we've been through a lot together, a lot of the stuff that the characters in the show go through together. And so I think we thought it could be very meaningful for us on a kind of personal level to take the journey of the show, to learn the lessons that the show has to teach about staying friends and staying artistic partners over time, the challenges of that and the rewards of that. So on a personal level, it seemed like something that maybe we could bring something unique to.
Working with Roundabout, how did that first happen? And now your company in residence with Roundabout, what does that mean?
Well, Roundabout came into our lives because of Into the Woods. And because of the success of that, I think they developed a relationship and interest in our work, not just on a show-by-show basis, but in an ongoing basis. That's rare. Even among partners who we've done more than one show with, it's actually pretty rare for a theater, especially one as successful and as large, frankly, as Roundabout, to actually make space in its programming and in its developmental life for an ongoing relationship with a sort of repertory company and acting ensemble like us is unprecedented in their history, I'm pretty sure, and certainly in ours, to have a relationship like this. That's how it came along, and the desire to be talking about long-term things allows us to view Roundabout as a place where we can take more risks and where we can continue to explore not only musicals, but other kinds of classics and other kinds of revivals. You know, really have a place to be working off-Broadway that has a resonance for all of us.
Once you know you're going to do Merrily, what happens? What's the next step? Does Mr. Sondheim have to get on board or not? What happens?
Well, I think it's not a simple answer as to like when we know we're going to do Merrily. Okay. It's kind of all part of one thing, which is to say that the process was revealing to us how we could meet the material. And what was kind of wonderful is as we were working on the show, getting to know it, trying to figure out how we would bring ourselves to it, Sondheim and Roundabout, they gave us an awfully long leash to kind of explore experiments with the show in large and small ways, so that we could figure out what it would mean for Fiasco to do Merrily. Although we were sort of emotionally committed to it, we were all trying to figure out what does it mean, and when and how might we do it. Once we sort of finally came to a deeper understanding of our approach to this, then we finally had a kind of a workshop and a presentation for Sondheim, who was then asked to give his, you know, thumbs up or thumbs down as to that approach. That approach, being given the great green light, then sort of triggered this other cascade of decisions that had been prepped for, but we were all sort of on tenterhooks. So it was a long process that we were all sort of committed to, but also open about, is this going to be the right material? Do we meet it well? And should we be doing it? Which is great, because then we're actually committing to the process, as opposed to how can we get to this product? Let's press go on a product.
One of the reasons that I think we were able to take this long developmental journey and to take, frankly, several wrong turns. You know, some of the early workshops, we were interested in certain things that didn't work, or that we ultimately became more interested in other things. And along the way, I think it's the consistency of trust that comes from Roundabout through their commitment to us in the residency that sort of allowed us to feel like we could actually genuinely explore and try things without feeling like if it didn't work, they were going to slam the door on the project. And one of the reasons that we really wanted to do this project in this way was because of the possibility of, in a Broadway, collaborating with Sondheim, not merely seeking his kind of blessing and approval, which of course is essential and which we want, but also the idea that we could hear his response to the things that we're working on. We've had conversations with him outside of the workshop process about things we're thinking about, things that the show brought up for us, and then he's been able to respond to that and add his own ideas and his own suggestions, some of which are even more radical than the things we thought we were afraid to articulate to him. And that's a testament to his ongoing creativity, his artistic hunger, and his willingness and ability to see his own work in new ways and reflected back to him in new ways. And it's continually inspiring, continues to amaze and inspire us that he's not only that open, but that interested in what other artists have to say about his work. And his response to the last workshop was very positive. So that gave us a lot of confidence that we were actually getting somewhere.
How do your conversations with him happen? Is it you shoot him an email or you have lunch?
Well, I'd be lying if I said I haven't saved every email that comes from Stephen Sondheim. I certainly have. It's still a bizarre feeling sometimes. Sometimes we do communicate with him directly in terms of his feedback about the show. He's sent us notes and things like that. And then at other times it requires more planning and lots of people to sort of figure out when he can attend a workshop or callbacks or any of the logistical things like that. But yeah, it's become fairly direct. It no longer feels quite as strange as it used to that it could be that. My hope is that that'll just continue to be true.
One of the other great pleasures and privileges of this process has been actually going to Stephen Sondheim's house, hanging out with him, calling him Steve, and talking about the show the way we would with any other collaborator with an openness, a willingness, a sort of let's throw the spaghetti against the wall, unpack this idea, this instinct. His ability to view us as equal collaborators in that process, and his open-mindedness after decades of not with this show and in a career, it kind of speaks volumes about him as an artist. But that's been one of the great pleasures of this, is that we get to talk with the creator about his ideas, his responses, and to meet those with ours and to challenge some of them, quite frankly, and that we can have the kind of conversations we have with him that we have amongst ourselves.
Let's go backwards a little bit, which is appropriate for the subject matter. How many people make up Fiasco, and when did you found it, and what has happened up to now?
So Fiasco is made up of primarily six people. Noah and Jesse Austrian and I are the three co-artistic directors of the company. We run the company, and then we also have three company members who are consistent members of the acting ensemble and with whom we develop our ideas about the work. And that's Emily Young and Andy Grote-Lucian and Paul Coffey. We all met in grad school, although Jesse, Emily, and I actually knew each other in undergrad and college as well. But we all ended up at the Brown Trinity MFA acting program in the years that it was founded and sort of reinvented by Oscar Eustace, who now runs the Public Theater. You may have heard of him. He's produced some fairly successful shows. Oscar is also an amazing teacher and a great institutional leader. And so he was there at that time, and Paula Vogel was still teaching playwriting at Brown at that time, and we had incredible acting teachers like Brian McElhaney. There were directors at Trinity like Kevin Moriarty and Amanda Daynard, who've gone on to large careers of their own regionally. So anyway, it was quite a time to be there in as the program was being rebooted from the old version of the Trinity Rep Conservatory. I think the training we got there was excellent, but we were also an intrepid group in those first few classes, and Noah and Andy and I were all in the very first class. And I think we came there knowing that it was kind of up to us on some level to help build that program. It didn't have a reputation nationally. We weren't going to suddenly walk out of there with careers if we didn't do something to help create those circumstances. So that meant that we ended up caring a lot about pedagogy and having a lot of conversations about that. Noah and I would talk late into the night at times after class about like what we were learning, developing a way of thinking about theater that was a little more total, that wasn't just about becoming good actors, but that where we were getting to direct things. Noah directed Jesse and I in a Harold Pinter play. I directed a short play that Noah wrote in grad school. We were already trying on these kind of hybridized actor-director identities, if nothing else, let alone all the other stuff we've ended up doing. And I think we just didn't want to stop doing that. And so after we got out of school, we were able to get some work, but none of that work was as satisfying as the stuff that we had sort of been doing together in school. And after putting together some opportunities to teach together, Noah and I were teaching together, and we brought Jesse into that, and then we decided to work on some Shakespeare. And then eventually we sort of said, look, we need to do a full project. And so in 2009, we did a showcase, Equity Showcase production of Shakespeare's Cymbeline, which really was our sort of start. And it was a production that got some great attention and ended up being produced by Theater for a New Audience off-Broadway and then transferring to the Barrow Street for a very long commercial off-Broadway run, which almost never happens for a Shakespeare play with no stars in it. So that was kind of our start. You know, that's led to all the other opportunities that have come since. And as we continue to expand the kind of shows we can work on and the collaborators who are involved, because that's the core people I named are the central company of Fiasco, but we also have a whole range of associate artists and usual suspects and friends and collaborators and colleagues, both actors and designers and producers and artistic directors and teachers, as we continue to learn more about what we do.
Cymbeline is one of the least produced Shakespeare plays. How did you choose that one for this launch?
You know, I don't remember exactly how we chose that over all the others, per se, but it's got scenes that often get worked on in schools and grad school. And I think we initially came to it because, oh yeah, it's got that great verse scene, you know, 3-4 or whatever. And then we kind of took a look at it and we read it and we thought it had three incredible acts, acts 1, 2, and 3, four and then 4 and 5, very challenging, confusing. But there was a lot to recommend it. We thought these are parts that we want to play. They're right for us. It's got musical events that are diegetic. It's got great physical events that are diegetic. There are offstage events that could be fun to bring on stage. It excited us. It challenged us. And it scared us in the right measure, I think. And the fact that, you know, as then at least young professional actors, and it didn't seem to require like the old man to play Lear or something like that. Like, it actually had roles that we could bite into and thought we could thrive in. We thought, well, this is something that would be fun to do. And that's really what motivated us. It's like, this would be fun for us to do. We actually didn't have any expectation that anybody else would like it. And I remember as we were sort of planning the producing of that first production, that the math that I did to try to kind of like come to something that was like not losing our shirts was to get 22 people a night to see it over 11 performances. I said, 220 people. We only know 40 people. It's not possible to get 220 people to come to this show. That's okay. We're doing it for ourselves. We get the artistic experience, and we get the learning experience of what it's like to put together a fully realized show. And that's what really drew us to it, the art and creating something together. And then a byproduct of that was that I think our passion and our joy and our developing ethos resonated with the audience in a very strong way. And then it got recognized, and for reasons of both luck and hard work, almost in equal measure, I'd say. So good things came of that, but I'm putting my emphasis on the fact that we just wanted to do something together, because I think that that's the important part of the story, not that we wanted to create a theater company and have a head of education and a head of development and that kind of stuff. We want to make theater together the way Ben described in graduate school, that to have immediate and strong agency in the room as an artist and as an actor. And that was a play that would give us that in spades. It meant that Ben could bring all of his strong musical talents. I could bring my fight choreography. And that was true for everyone. It meant that we could each bring our strengths and that the strengths of others would spackle over our weaknesses. And as a result, we looked really smart. And that's what a collaborative ensemble can do.
So we're out of time. I want to talk to you forever. So let's say I'll try to set up another interview maybe after opening. We'll do like this preview one and then talk about it after I've seen it.
All right.
Oh, that'd be great.
Cool. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Roundabout Theater Company presents Fiasco Theater's new production of Merrily We Roll Along off-Broadway at the Laura Pels Theater. Previews begin tomorrow and the show opens on February 19th. To learn more, visit roundabouttheater.org. That link will be posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.